For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
BetOnline is your number one source for all your summer sports this season, from MLB, golf, NBA, and NHL playoffs. All the latest stats, news, and scores are available to follow your favorite teams. Get the latest odds and lines, including the latest team matchups, player props, and odds on just about every sport out there. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to get in on the action. BetOnline, where the game starts.
This is the Fun Belt Podcast, part of the Believe Network.
Folks, to Dusty Thibodeau of Warhawk Report, Jeremy Harper of Howlraiser, and Shane Metlin of the Daily News Record.
I think it's potentially a very good week for the Sun Belt.
But I'm just kind of going off on a random rant. It's just frustrating. It's...
Mike Jones. Shane, that was Houston-based rapper Mike Jones, who is not joining us on this episode, but instead it's a legend from Old Dominion who is now the head coach of the men's basketball program, the 14th coach in history. Mike Jones joins us to talk about returning home and taking over the Monarchs. Coach Jones, tell us, how are things there for you at the old stomping grounds?
As busy as ever, but we are excited. There's definitely an energy that is contagious around here. And like myself personally and the staff, we're so excited to be here and ready to get going.
We know it's a job that you always want. You always want to go back to where you were. It's a place that'll have special meaning to you. But when you're at Maryland, the ACC, the big time schools, how does that kind of go about, of them reaching out to you to say, hey, we know we're not in the ACC, but we're in the Sun Belt. We're one of the top mid majors. How about a homecoming visit?
I mean, to be honest with you, as you mentioned, like, this was definitely a dream job for me. So I don't necessarily look at it as what level this is or what conference we're playing in. Love the Sun Belt. Think it's a great conference, competitive conference. But to me, it was just more about this place and the people that are here and how impactful the entire Norfolk community was, and me being the person I am, but this school especially. This is home to me, and I truly feel like, you know, the honor and the privilege it is to be the head coach here, one thing, but the expectation I have for myself and my staff on living up to what this fan base deserves is the cross that we carry every single day. So, again, we could not be more excited.
When you were at Maryland this past year, you did get to play South Alabama. Did Richie Riley, did he kind of start planting that seed saying, come on, man, you know you want to come to the belt?
No, he did not, but very well-coached team. I've known Coach Riley's teams for a couple of years now, so I look forward to competing against his squads. But then, you know, this league is a lot stronger from top to bottom than a lot of other conferences. And I look forward to that competition. That is what I'm used to. So and then there's a couple coaches in the league that I know that I look forward to competing against. So this will be fun. And obviously winning is fun. So I'm hoping that I'm having more fun than the other guys.
You know, obviously you mentioned you're coming back to ODU. You've got a real strong reputation around all of Virginia and the DMV. Like, what's kind of the reception been as you start the recruiting trail in that mid-Atlantic area, as, you know, saying, hey, we're ODU, this is what we're doing, this is what we're going to do, and just getting to know, or not getting to know, but coming to them as the ODU head coach now?
Well, I think I got a lot of help, to be honest with you. Just the relationships that I have been able to establish and maintain over the years. That part, I'll say is going to be easier because of I don't have to introduce myself to many people. And I got a lot of players that, are now in these communities as well that can vouch for me. I do think the recruiting aspect of it is going to be something that I'm thoroughly going to enjoy because, again, I am obviously very comfortable within this footprint. But we're going to bring in the best guys we can bring in from wherever they're from. So whether that be 757 local guys, whether they be DMV guys, all up and down the East Coast. But, because of my relationship with USA Basketball over the last however many years, since 2004, I feel like that'll be an advantage for me as well because I do have guys that I've worked with all across the country. So recruiting is going to be fun. Finding guys that fit the way we play and the way we want to play, I look forward to that.
So the first thing you had to do when you really came in, you had to build your staff. A guy that was one of your first calls, I'm sure you made, an old teammate of yours, Odell Hodge. What was this a payback for an old college bet, or is he really that legit of a player and coach?
Well, I don't think anybody could question the player he is. His name and number and the Raptors here. We're doing everything we can to immerse ourselves back into this community. So Odell and I and the rest of the staff will walk across campus a couple of times a week to go to the student union to eat and things like that. And we can't go 30 seconds without, either somebody driving by yelling Odell's name, somebody walking by stopping him. It's pretty cool. But honestly, we were roommates, so I'm kind of used to that because he was so good. But I want to make sure people understand the coach that Odell is. He ran an entire professional franchise in Europe, from top to bottom, from the youth teams all the way up to the pro team. So the fact that he is that well-versed in just organization as well as coaching just speaks volumes to what he's going to be able to bring to our team and our program. So this is not an old bet being paid off. I didn't lose many bets to Odell, so it would have been him. If anything, this is him paying off his bet by coming to agree to work with me, not the other way around.
No, he said that y'all were in the rec center way back in like the late 90s, and he was like, all right, next shot, the other one's got to hire the other one.
Hey, trust me, if that was the case, I made the shot before he did.
Yeah, going back to those days, being on the JMU beat, I know when you played, that to me, that was kind of the peak of the JMU-ODU rivalry where you're beating each other in the championship games of the CAA in consecutive years, and you guys go on your run in the NCAA tournament and everything. Just when you saw ODU and JMU were getting back together in the Sun Belt, what was that like for you? And like, just where do you kind of think that rivalry is going now that the new coaches at both programs?
I mean, to be honest with you, I said that, the funny thing is ODU played JMU three times last year and JMU won all three games. And, I felt a little bit each time that JMU won one of those games. So, I would just say rivalry renewed and, we're looking forward to playing the Dukes.
Yeah. I mean, along those lines too, when the job was open, I kind of said, I think ODU might be the best job in the conference with the resources that are there, the location and everything else. I'd probably put JMU as number two right now, those two jobs. I mean, just do you kind of see those places being kind of to get the Sun Belt to a place where maybe it's a two-bid league or continues to improve? Just how important is it for your program to kind of, get to that point?
Well, please understand, the motivation in getting this program where it needs to be has nothing to do with anything other than this program deserves it. And, the history here, the fan base we have, the facilities we have, the great leadership in our administration, the location we're in, this is a great job. So myself and my staff, we feel very blessed. But no disrespect to the rest of the Sun Belt. Two-bid league is something that we all should be striving for, but it's not because of ODU and JMU. I mean, Georgia State, Georgia Southern, you know, Coastal and App State. Yeah, you go to the other division and the teams on that side with South Alabama, Louisiana, Monroe, Troy, you know, Arkansas State and the run that they had with the first-year head coach this year, Southern Miss. Like, this is not a league where you can just look at a couple of teams to say, okay, well, that's where it's going to be. I think this league has the potential to be one of the best mid-major leagues that there is, and that I think that should be our goal, is to be one of those leagues that we're not talking about, hey, our champions going to the postseason. Like, this should be somewhere where a couple of teams are vying for an NCAA bid every year, and then a couple of other teams are vying for a postseason play. That stems from great competition, that stems from great coaching, that stems from great recruiting, great fan bases that are showing that support. And I truly believe that this league not just has that potential, but I think that should be our expectation.
7 wins for the Monarchs this past year. What do you feel is a great improvement and kind of the goal for this year? I mean, I know I say that and you're like, man, we're going 40-0. But I mean, what do you feel is kind of that sense of, okay, we may not be at the 40-0 mark, but we're seeing the improvement. We're getting where we need to be.
So understand, when you talk to me, like, I've been doing this a long time. I try my best to get away from the cliche statements or the coach speak. I want to do the best job I can to not do that. Having said that, I'm getting ready to do that because we're going to try to win every game we play. Like, hey, we're going to try to go 1-0 every single time we step on the floor. I have not thought about what success would be in terms of a record next year. I know what success looks like. I know what success feels like. I'll know it if we have it. But I'm also a coach that's never going to be satisfied. So, you know, we're not going 40-0 next year. But if we went 40-0, honestly, playing 40 games, I'll be trying to win 41 the next year. Like, whatever it is, I'm not going to be, and I have surrounded myself with people, we're not going to be satisfied no matter where we are. It's always in establishing and maintaining a level of success and expectation that our program is proud of, our fan base can be proud of. That'll help me sleep at night. So until we get there, we're going to be working.
Yeah, the coaches have surely welcomed you with open arms, but have you kind of laid down the gauntlet that you're going to be squaring off on the hardwood or on the softball field against baseball, Ricky Ronnie and his staff on the gridiron? Is there some kind of cross sport rivalry there?
Not yet, but it's funny. So, you know, Coach Delicia is right next door to me. I'm meeting with her later this week just to, you know, get the lay of the land in terms of her perspective and any help she can offer. But then also, I think it's tomorrow, we have this field hockey event that we're going to attend with our field hockey program, which is one of the great programs of our university, has won national championships, Olympians, gold medals, national players of the year. They have an event that maybe when we agreed to participate, I didn't read the fine print, but I just got an email that said, so when you guys are out there participating, and I'm just like, what? Like, so evidently tomorrow or sometime at this field hockey event, I will have one of those sticks and the ball, and I'll be chasing it around, and evidently Ricky Ronnie will be out there doing the same thing, and the other coaches of the other sports will be out there too. So I didn't necessarily know that. So after this interview, I'm going to go get in the weight room, get on the treadmill a little bit, loosen up, because I am incredibly competitive. And I don't want anybody to be able to say they beat me at anything. So I'm sure the rest of the coaches on campus will get that vibe from me at some point, even though it's all in good fun.
Those sticks are not very long. I'm not sure that's the game for a guy your height.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, if I think back to all the field hockey players that I knew here, all those young ladies were much shorter than me. So I don't know how that works, but I'll figure it out. Maybe I'll just play goalie.
I'm going to be looking for video of that.
Yeah, I'll be goalie. And no, you will not get any video of that.
Unless he scores, and then it'll be like all over the place, top SportsCenter top 10 and everything.
Absolutely.
Coach, with that said, you know, Ricky Ronnie, I'll give you the inside scoop on him. He's a baseball guy. I really think that he missed his calling, that he should be a baseball coach or at least a commentator. So, Coach, well, what are you when you're not on the hardwood?
A golfer. A golfer.
It's just like field hockey.
No, my clubs are custom made for me, though, so I don't have to hunch over too much. But I needed a competitive outlet. I tore my Achilles playing basketball in 2018. So I do not play anymore. I'll shoot with anybody, but I don't run up and down the court anymore. I'm never going to want to go through that pain again. But I will play golf, and that is where I get my competitive juices satisfied. So I am a golfer. Since I left the high school game and came on the college side, my golf game has tremendously suffered. But I will always call myself a golfer because I love the game so much.
You're a better man than me. I am not a golfer unless there's maybe a windmill or a clown involved. Coach Jones, we cannot thank you enough for breaking away from the busyness as you get settled back home on Old Dominion. Message for the fans, message for the league. We'll leave you with that. Tell us, what can we expect out of this Monarchs team?
We are just extremely excited. We truly feel like we represent a world-class university. We are so excited to be a part of the Sun Belt, as I've mentioned already. I believe this is a great league with a lot of bright days in the future, and we're glad to be a part of it. And I'm looking forward so much. We are looking forward to the competition of it. We've got a lot of work to do to hold up our end of that bargain in terms of competing, but I think we're built for it. We're made for it. We are Monarchs. Monarchs rule. And we're hoping to be able to get to the point where we can say that we're doing that and working our way towards it.
So, Shane, we got to talk to the new man, the new leader of the Monarchs, and we hit record just for the Monarchist, Mike Jones. Very open, very candid. I liked it. I think that he's going to do good things there in the long run, but I definitely think that it's going to take a little bit of time to get the roster right, to get things going in the right direction. But he's definitely the man. I mean, you have two former players on your coaching staff. That's a tough hand to beat.
Yeah, and we'll see how the next few weeks go too. I think, you know, it's possible they could get the roster right here soon. I think, you know, there's going to be guys in the portal that could be instant difference makers. I mean, we saw it with JMU last year. You get a guy like TJ Bickerstaff coming from a Power Five program who just wants to ball more, basically. You know, maybe an ODU or anybody else in the Sun Belt can do that. But I think, you know, they could turn it around pretty quickly if they get the right pieces.
Is there a team when you kind of stick in the basketball mode, is there a team that you kind of look at saying, yeah, that's probably our preseason favorite right now?
I mean, I might go with Arkansas State right now. I can say that because Jeremy's here to let us have it. But, you know, right now it just seems like they're keeping their roster together as much as they can, adding some pieces, kind of going in with some momentum after finishing strong and get into the championship game. You know, they're the ones I'd point to right now. I think we'll probably see some other teams make some moves here in the next few weeks to make it more interesting. But if we're going to pick a champion right now, I think it almost have to be Arkansas State.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that they are returning enough of the pieces from their success this season and adding even more, knowing that they have at least two highly touted players coming in to kind of shore up that roster even more. Never want to count out, though, Bob Marlin at Louisiana Lafayette. Never want to count out Scott Cross. I think that they can still do some big things next year as well, but it'll be interesting to see just kind of how the league shapes up. I think ULM has some pretty lofty expectations with Keith Richard coming back for his 15th season at ULM. Maybe this is the year that they can kind of move up into the middle of the standings and get at least a decent seed in Pensacola for that conference tournament.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, be interesting to see who they end up with on the roster. If they retain some of the guys who looked good last year, I mean, do they have any shot of, you know, keeping, you know, the big man whose name we can't pronounce
Nika, no, Nika's gone.
Yeah.
Nika is gone. Bye-bye. He has left the building, off the bayou, off the reservation for the old Indian fans. He's out of there. I do think it's interesting, though. Kim Caldwell, the women's basketball coach of the year from Marshall, departs for Tennessee. Congrats to her. I mean, you go from last year, you're a D2 coach. This year, you're a mid-major D1, and now you're in the SEC. Congrats. But I'm interested to see what is that if that momentum that she created there at Marshall, if that kind of carries over to next season with whoever they get for their next head coach, are they able to keep the ball rolling, keep the herd running, and really keep the energy going to where they're able to be at the top end of the conference standings again? And then big picture, I'm wondering, without the likes of Caitlin Clark, without Angel Reese, without the big center there from South Carolina, and really having no big marquee names coming back in women's basketball overall, is that momentum kind of dead going into next year as well?
I don't think we'll see it be as kind of crazy as it was this year for women's basketball. I think they'll build on, you know, what's happened over the past decade, and it's not just going to go away. I don't know if we're going to see 18 million people watching a national championship game next year, which is fine. I mean, there'll still be a lot of people watching. I think the game is going to be in good shape long term. As far as Marshall goes, I don't know. I mean, what they do with their hire is going to make a huge difference. Nobody really expected what they got this year from Kim Caldwell, and nobody really expected it to only be a 1-year thing once the ball started rolling. With the portal, I mean, it's all about who the coach is and how quickly they get in players, and they may or may not. The hire is going to be a huge thing for them.
Do you think that she was wanting to bail, knowing that that roster was going to have a turnover and she might not have the success again next year?
I doubt that. I mean, I think she'd been fine. Like, they've got players going into the portal now that would have been a strong core coming back. I think she probably could have found some players to build around them. You're not going to have Abby Beeman to do it, but, you know, she was, you know, she got her accolades during the conference tournament, but she wasn't the only player getting it done for Marshall. I think they would have been just fine if she comes back. I think Tennessee's probably going to be pretty good with her. Whether or not they get to the caliber that they expect, where, you know, they expect national championships, that's lofty, but I think they're going to be good with her. And I think Marshall would have been really good for a long time as long as she stayed.
Without a doubt. Shifting gears there, Shane, it's not necessarily football related, but of course everyone wants to tweet out, it's budget time, budgets are coming out, showing the disparaging numbers between the top of the league with James Madison with, what is it, a $65 million athletic budget, ULM somewhere approaching the $19 million budget. But there's a lot to those numbers when you start kind of peeling back those layers. And even within Louisiana, you look at the differences between ULM, Louisiana Lafayette. Louisiana Lafayette has a bigger student enrollment, so, of course, they're going to have more money from a student fee. ULM doesn't have much of a student fee at all. And on the academic side, they're really giving as much as they legally can to athletics. So, really, the only revenue streams that you can really bank on trying to grow are the auxiliary services, things like your dorm rooms, your room and board, kind of that overhead you get off of maybe your Aramark or Sodexo type of contract for your catering, your facility rentals, and things like that. Truth be told, that's going to be a different number even across the league within the city within the state and everything, because the facilities that maybe ULM has are not as much in demand as maybe Georgia State's are in downtown Atlanta. You've done a lot of research and looked a lot into this. Am I way off base when I start kind of peeling back those layers and seeing those things?
No, I mean, you're hitting it on the head. Like you don't really know what the raw number and the total number actually means. And it's so different places. Like, you know, you're just talking about, so JMU, for instance, they just have, you know, a Bert Kreischer show at their arena. You think, okay, so maybe that's some money for the athletic department. That none of that stuff ever goes to the athletic department at JMU, and it's completely different. Even just an hour away at Virginia, they pay for their arena on all the concerts that they host. Like their operating costs for their arena are nothing because they host a bunch of concerts. And at JMU, that money just goes to the school. Concession stands from football games goes to the school. Any like licensed memorabilia or t-shirts or hats or anything like that, that all goes to the university foundation and, you know, towards the endowment and things. And it's just, it's so much different everywhere. Unless you really, really spend just hours and hours and hours and days digging into what every single school's finances were line by line, you're not really going to know like the true story of any of this budget stuff, I don't think.
But those numbers and instances you talked about at JMU, is that considered the kind of academic or school portion of the funding that they're giving to athletics that really kind of athletics earned anyway?
Yeah. So it's like you said, they get school funding from, you know, from JMU. It's like very clearly labeled. It's a student fee that goes towards athletics, but then athletics is putting money back into the school via, you know, everybody who said, oh man, we're in the NCAA tournament, I got to buy a JMU shirt. Like that money just goes back to the school. So it's kind of like a circular thing at JMU in particular. And then there's also things that like what each school decides is an athletic or, you know, part of their sports budget is looked at differently. Like there's a lot made in Virginia where JMU and ODU have to reach this threshold where only 55% of their budget can come from student fees. And if you look at the bar graph, it looks like student fees is way more than 55%. But that's for everything that JMU is saying is part of our athletic budget. And that at JMU, that includes the marching band, the cheerleaders, like stuff you're not even thinking about. They pay like the utilities for the buildings that they use on campus. They pay that back to the school. It's really weird how they do their accounting, honestly. And, you know, what the state says they have to count as athletic budget isn't the same as what they say their athletic budget is. So they already were pretty close to that 55% before they even moved to FBS. It just doesn't look like it because of how you label things.
So you think it's more that fans and maybe coaches kind of use that more so as motivation or against one another more than it actually means this school is way better off than this school? Or do you think that that's kind of a fair gauge to say this school, because they have more money, is going to have more success than another one?
I mean, I think it's fair to some degree. I mean, I think JMU, ODU, some of these schools definitely are spending more than ULM and probably more than, you know, a lot of the schools, but it's not as much more as it looks like just when you start looking at a bar graph. I don't think JMU's outspending everybody by 15 to 20 million. It might be by a few million, and that's an advantage, but I don't think it's quite as crazy as it looks like on paper, you know, unless you think that having 500 people in the marching band is going to help you win more football games. And maybe it does in some way, but I don't think that's what people are talking about when they're talking about the budget advantages.
We all need more cowbell, Shane.
Yeah.
So I'm also curious, just thinking back while you were saying that, of, you know, having more money and all that. I remember when Georgia State went on that big NCAA tournament run, maybe to the Sweet 16 or round of 32, you know, with the infamous Ron Hunter falling out of the chair and all that. He came back the following year, but kind of under the condition of, hey, I need a bigger budget. We don't want to have to bus to Texas State. We want to fly there. You know, we don't want to necessarily have to bus to Coastal Carolina. We want to fly there. Does that money typically kind of follow the coach so that when he left for Tulane, that money's out the door? Or does it kind of stay within the program since it's already budgeted to try to draw in that next big coach?
I would say probably try to draw in the coach and keep it as it's budgeted. But I mean, I think that stuff all kind of varies year to year. And, you know, new people come in, whether they're coaches or ADs or presidents or any of that stuff, and they have to decide what their priorities are going to be. And, you know, I mean, to go back to the topic about, you know, how much the budget matters, you know, Dan D'Antoni, when he was still in the league, would talk all the time about, hey, if you charter jet to a road game as opposed to taking a bus or even flying commercial, you're some level of percent more likely to win that road game. And that's just part of the budget and how these schools decide they want to spend the money. And so I think it does come down to that, but I don't know. I mean, it's probably more complicated than I'm smart enough to really get into, because numbers were never really my thing to begin with. But I know it's not quite as simple as it looks like in a pie chart or a bar graph.
Moving on from the numbers to the diamond, the Raging Cajuns just dominating on both the softball and baseball diamonds. Baseball entered the Wednesday night game against Louisiana Tech on a 16-game winning streak, one of the longest in the nation, sitting at 11-1 overall in the conference, 25-8 overall. I've seen them projected as high as a number 2 seed in a regional. Is that kind of surprising that the Cajuns are where they are? Or do you feel that that is pretty fair and what we were kind of expecting coming into the season?
I don't know if it was what we were expecting. I mean, trying to think back to it, especially on the baseball side, you know, I think we thought a lot of Coastal and some other teams coming in. I think we thought that they'd be good. Maybe more on softball side. It's kind of what we always expect from the Cajuns, right? That they're going to win every conference series they play and not draw very many games even in those series. But yeah, definitely impressive what's going on in Lafayette right now with the bats and balls.
Well, it's a safe assumption with softball, right? Because I mean, there are what, I think 88 conference series is in a row that they've won. Yeah, I'd probably bet for them to take 89, and then I'd probably bet on them to take number 90. So yeah, I think that's a safe bet on the softball side. On the baseball side, I think the most surprising team is actually Arkansas State, how they shot out the gate. What was it, 8-0, 9-0, and even cranked off that opening day win against Louisiana Lafayette, but have done nothing since. They're sitting at 3-9 at the bottom of the standings, right next to ULM and just below South Alabama at 4-8. I really thought this was maybe the year it started clicking. And I think Jeremy even was starting to buy the hype of Red Wolf baseball. What happened to him?
Yeah, maybe that goes back to our whole budget conversation, because I know they spend less money on baseball than anybody. You know, maybe that just catches up to you, like in a long season like that, talking about, you know, how you travel, who you play, all this stuff. You know, it just seems like it's an uphill climb for Arkansas State baseball, even when they do get off to a nice start.
Yeah, they're struggling on the softball diamond as well. They still have not even recorded a win or a loss on the season. There's my every show shot that they don't have softball, Shane. I'm finally thinking of one other thing I had to say on the budget. App State, I want to say their budget was right around $38.5 million. Yes, they've had great success in the Sun Belt era. I don't want to talk about their old SoCon days, their national titles. I'm talking just FBS. They've had a good run where they've been very competitive. They've gone to bowls, won bowls. I think they have 4 conference championships. And yet, if they have that big of a budget, you would think that they would be a better athletic program across the board. But they've never finished above, I think, 6th. In the Bubas Cup, even. Is that because the Bubas Cup takes into effect or takes into account kind of the lesser sports like a men's tennis and men's soccer that not everybody has?
I think that makes a difference. You know, it ended up costing just knowing where JMU was in the standings last year, not having like the men's swimming and the men's track, especially since swimming wasn't in it last year, but the men's track and field really hurt them from having a chance to win it last year. So I think that probably helps some schools more and hurts some. You know, wrestling's a big thing at App State, and that's not going to factor into it because it's not a Sun Belt sport. I think it's also like just, you know, they were getting more into basketball this year. Their fan base really got riled up about the basketball team's success. You know, even women's basketball a little bit more. You see some more interest in baseball, but it's really football number one, two, and three before you get to any other sports, it seems like, at App State. Maybe a little bit more than some of the other places. Football's number one everywhere, right? But it kind of overshadows a lot of stuff at App State, to me, it seems like.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think maybe Georgia State, you would say that basketball, men's basketball, is probably a little bit bigger. Maybe Southern Miss baseball is a little bit bigger. Basketball is probably rivaling as a close second here recently. But yeah, I would say football is definitely the king everywhere. And, you know, that's just showing my ADD side where we're talking about baseball and we go back to App State and football budgeting. We are just about a month away from the start of the Sun Belt Conference softball championship held at the international headquarters of the Viva La Boob Cats in San Marcos. With that said, obviously Louisiana Lafayette still sitting atop, Texas State 9-3, ULM maybe surprising people a little bit, 8-4, got the sweep over the weekend against Georgia Southern. Georgia State sitting at 1-11 to bring up the rear. Everyone makes the tournament though, Shane. As you kind of look, as we enter this last month of the season, any surprises or disappointments you've seen on that side?
I don't know. I mean, nothing that kind of jumps out, to be boring, but, you know, nothing necessarily jumps out huge to me as far as, you know, that goes.
I'm a little disappointed that your James Madison team is sitting at 5-7, lower half of the standings. I just always assume that between them, South Alabama, and the Raging Cajuns, that's going to be kind of your top side of the standings. But instead, we have Cajuns, no shocker there, Texas State, ULM, Troy as your top four that would wind up getting those byes into the second round of the tournament.
Yeah, I mean, I think JMU has a chance to move up the standings here in the next couple of weeks, just kind of looking at how the schedule plays out, and they've got a home series here. But yeah, it's been, I think, a tougher rebuild for a variety of reasons since that College World Series run than they expected. You know, some of it goes back to the conference switch and everything else, but it is a little bit disappointing, I think, on the JMU side of things. But their young team, I think, are building towards maybe getting back to where they were before they joined the Sun Belt.
Enough of the show, Shane. We got to cut it short to go on our cross-country hunt for Jeremy, not knowing where he's at, why he's not here. I hope he's still alive and good. Maybe he gets his face on the milk carton again this week, just like you did a couple weeks ago, Shane.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. We really don't know what he's up to.
We really have no idea where Jeremy is.
Whatever that means.
He's out on the business.
Yeah.
Our business here, though, is plug promos and parting shots. Shane, give us what you got.
Just go with the promo, I guess, plug. Check out DNR.online/sports to read, you know, what we have in the Daily News Record about JMU and other Sun Belt teams. And yeah, that's really all I got tonight.
I'm going to give a shout out. I know it's not one of our standards, but that's still what I'm going with. Former Raging Cajun Spencer Arrighetti got his major league debut on Wednesday night for the Houston Astros as they faced off against the Kansas City Royals. Did not go well though, Shane. Took the L, 21 0.00 ERA. It was a shellacking. Why is it when you have a major league debut, it's either a, man, why didn't we bring this guy up sooner, or a, ooh, he wasn't ready yet?
I don't know. It does seem to go that way, though, doesn't it? Like, I don't know. Sometimes I think maybe the new guys catches somebody by surprise. You haven't seen them yet. And sometimes, like you said, they just weren't ready.
I'm hoping that he can rebound from it. Always good when we can have Sun Belt players in the league, and looking forward to seeing what he can do. I was upset I didn't get to go to Sugar Land, the AAA home for the Houston Astros, the Space Cowboys, to check him out before he made his debut. But hopefully this is enough to send him back down, at least long enough for me to make my way down there to see him.
Yeah, plus that's just a great name. I did not know that was the name of the AAA affiliate down there these days.
The Space Cowboys.
I can't keep up with the new minor leagues, so that's pretty awesome.